Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, California is giving it another try this week, launching its new framework for allowing certain businesses to reopen based on how well their counties are handling the coronavirus. Governor Gavin Newsom says the new plan is easier to understand and stricter than its predecessor that's been blamed for a surge of infections. We'll learn more about California's four-tier color-coded system for opening businesses and take a closer look at how the state's second largest county, San Diego, is dealing with it. We'll get started after this news. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. This week, many indoor shopping malls, hair salons, and barbershops opened in parts of California with limits on how many people they could serve under the state's new four-tier color-coded reopening system. The new plan has received mixed reactions. Some local officials say it's arbitrary and moves too slowly, while others fear it moves too quickly and could lead to another surge in cases. We look at how the plan is playing out in California's San Diego County and take your questions about the health and safety of activities allowed under the new system. Joining us is Dr. Peter Chin Hong, an infectious disease specialist at UCSF Medical Center. Thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Chin Hong.
Thanks for having me on, Mina. Always a pleasure.
Also with us is Paul Sisson, a reporter covering healthcare for the San Diego Union-Tribune. Thanks for joining us as well, Paul Sisson.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Paul, I'll start with you. If you could just explain the state's new reopening plan for us and how it's different from the way Governor Newsom did it before.
Right. As you may recall, the governor and the state in general up to this point has had a special watch list for counties deemed to have a level of coronavirus transmission that was too high. So there were over 30 counties on that watch list. And this week they came out with a new four-tiered color-coded system that replaces the watch list throughout the state. And so they kind of seeded different counties at the various different levels of this tiered watch list this week. And then they'll be checking in on Tuesday to decide which ones may, based on their numbers, their coronavirus numbers, get to move up or move down in this hierarchy.
And so in this color system, basically purple, it goes from purple, red, orange to yellow, with purple being the most widespread in terms of infection and yellow being the least so. Dr. Chin Hong, as Paul Sisson was noting, they've changed sort of the criteria for what constitutes whether or not a county can begin to lift restrictions on certain businesses and increase capacity of those businesses. Those are, of course, the number of new daily coronavirus cases and also positivity rates. First, do you think those are effective new metrics, better than the ones they had before?
I think they are better from a health systems and health sciences perspective. The reason is this. In the old system, it's very binary. You'd be on the watch list or you'd be off. And there are a lot of counties actually on the bubble, and it was very frustrating to actually be on the bubble and you'd be in a gradation, essentially a shade of gray, and not be able to do certain things. In the new system, there is a shade of gray, so you could potentially begin a gradual phase of reopening or not.
Well, is this a safe time to be doing this, Dr. Chin Hong? I mean, we have well over 700,000 cases in the state. We average some 5,500 cases a day. I mean, one of the things that Health and Human Services Secretary Dr. Mark Galli said was that the state is not out of the woods. So should we be lifting restrictions right now?
I'm very cautious about it. And you can just look at the behavior of the counties to give you some, indication that things are being interpreted in different ways, even though we have more of a shade of gray kind of scale. And, you know, San Francisco County, for example, has always been more conservative. And I it kind of reflects my own feeling as well. We're moving probably just a smudge too fast in certain areas. And I think coming up on Labor Day, now that we are, I think many people are worried that it's just going to be Memorial Day all over again. But again, moving slowly, moving cautiously would be my sort of where I sit the most comfortably.
Mm. Well, interestingly, Paul Sisson, for example, Los Angeles County, it's in the purple, but it can still open indoor, you know, hair salons, barbershops, and malls, and it's deciding not to. Why not?
You know, I just I think that the general consensus is that we know what's going on the ground. We investigate these outbreaks at various locations. You know, I haven't spoken to LA County officials, but my sense is with pretty much all of the epidemiology departments at the county level is that, you know, if they are just seeing a certain number of cases, a certain amount of activity in a certain type of business or other organization, they're just going to be more cautious.
And so it also sounds like it really is the local, at the local level, that local officials can make the call about whether or not to open businesses or to actually allow for some of the lifting of restrictions that this tiered system says it can do.
Right, exactly. Local public health officers do have the ability to be more restrictive than the governor's guidelines. They can't be less restrictive unless they want to risk losing certain state revenue that comes to the state through the CARES Act. So what we see in San Diego, for example, is a couple additional requirements added on to the governor's basic framework that came out this week. For example, they've asked everyone who is moving businesses back indoors to one extent or another, be it barbershops at 100% or restaurants at something like, I think it's 50%, to keep a log of every single one of their customers, complete with name and phone number. So in the event that they do have an outbreak in a place like that, they can, it makes it very easy for them to know who was there and call them immediately and find out who they were in close contact with.
And it sounds like the governor is no longer entertaining these requests for counties when they make their own case to reopen, that basically he is no longer going to be giving them leeway.
Right. They made a lot of discussion this week about being relatively strong and inflexible on these tiers. You're going to stay at your existing tier for a full 21 days, and you're going to need to meet the requirements of the next tier for two straight weeks before we're going to let you move up. And it seems like they're really being rather forceful on that point.
And how do counties move backwards?
Well, if they stop meeting the requirements of their current tier, then they would move backwards. So, for example, right now, San Diego, in order to be in the tier two, the substantial category that's color-coded red, they need to have between 4 and 7 cases per 100,000 residents per day, and they need to have a positivity rate between 5% and 8%. So if they fell out of either of those metrics for 2 weeks, then they would fall back to the purple tier.
I see. And can you explain sort of this new framework with regards to how it allows for sort of progressive capacity growth of businesses? And you can use San Diego, of course, as a guide. But for example, this time around, it will say, you know, whether or not restaurants can have 25% capacity or 50% capacity.
Right. There's this kind of gradual gradation here that's listed. They have a nice matrix that allows you to kind of run your finger along and see how it changes. I'm looking at it right now. So restaurants in the purple tier, for example, are only allowed to have outdoor dining. As you move up into the red tier, you can have max use of 25% of your indoor capacity up to no more than 100 people. If you get up to tier three, you get up to 50% capacity and a max of 200 people. And then at tier four, where you need to have less than one case per 100,000 residents, you can get to max 50% capacity with no cap on the number of people.
Can I get your opinion on this, Dr. Peter Chin Hong? I mean, what do you think about sort of this progressive reopening, progressive capacity building?
Well, it sounds like a whole bunch of math. And I think what my concern is, you know, with the shades of gray, that, you know, it gets confusing for people. I think not confusing for business owners, confusing for customers who come in and have to sort of like figure out what part of the calculus they're in. You know, overall, it is a good strategy because, again, you're doing things. I think the bottom line is that you're doing things slowly and gradually. And as Governor Newsom says, we're going to be a bit stubborn in this phase of reopening once again. And how they achieve that, I think it's not only about the math and the complicated calculus that we have to do, but, you know, communicating to people and completely always touching base with folks to let them know why we're doing what we're doing. And again, we don't want to be back in the place we were in after Memorial Day.
Yes, but we hear so much about how it's aerosolized, how the virus is aerosolized. So opening indoor spaces, say like shopping malls with 25% max capacity in the purple tier, or 50% capacity if you're in the red tier, or hair salons and retail with 25% max capacity. I mean, that's safe, even indoors?
It's not always safe, and that's the other aspect of the guidelines that I always have trouble with. It doesn't take into consideration the wide variety of settings that people are in. You can be in a hair salon that's completely a small room with poor ventilation, and that's not the same as being in a big, open, converted warehouse hair salon. So I think it's not really the site as much as the activity and the context in which you're doing your specific task. So that's really where I think we break down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're saying ventilation is really key. We're talking with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist at UCSF's Medical Center, and with Paul Sisson, a reporter covering healthcare for the San Diego Union-Tribune. And with you, our listeners, join the conversation. What is your reaction to this new framework that the state has put out? Are you worried the numbers will go back up again? Why or why not? Dr. Chin Hong mentioned, of course, that this is also a few days before a big holiday, just like it was a few days before the Memorial Day holiday when things started to reopen. Does that worry you? Are you a business owner waiting to open despite state and public health officials giving you the go-ahead? Why or why not? You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. And Peter and Paul Sisson, I would like to get more into the situation in San Diego. I mean, one of the things that I want to make clear is that basically, if you're in the red tier, what is open that was not allowed to be open in purple?
Right. Well, it's interesting because, you know, the hair salons and barbershops and nail salons were not allowed to be open indoors until this new framework was announced. And the new framework allows some opening even at the purple tier. So. You know, it's interesting that kind of everybody got that ability to move back indoors for some of these things.
In San Diego, it will be gyms, houses of worship, etc. So I'd love to hear more about that after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about the state's new reopening plan that was launched this week, unveiled last Friday. We're joined by Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist at UCSF, and Paul Sisson with the San Diego Union-Tribune. And with you, our listeners, give us your questions, your thoughts about this new system and how you are experiencing it, especially if you're a business owner or a parent trying to figure out how they affect school reopenings. Give us a call, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. And looking at San Diego specifically, so Paul Sisson, you spoke with a number of different business owners. Can you talk about kind of what you saw as their reaction as to whether or not, what they're weighing in terms of whether or not they should open?
Right. You know, there are so many considerations. You know, for example, restaurants being able to have 25% of their indoor seating capacity back. That in and of itself probably is not enough to sustain a restaurant, 25% of their indoor seating capacity. So those that already have developed functioning large patios where they've been working outdoors for a month are probably more likely to see that regaining of that sliver of indoor capacity as a positive thing, whereas others who don't have an outdoor patio are kind of feeling like, gosh, this still isn't enough for me to actually reopen. And so you see that, all over the place. Movie theaters, for example, are now allowed to have 25% of their seating capacity back. We're out covering that this week in terms of, you know, A, is that going to be enough to sustain these businesses? B, is anybody going to want to go sit indoors in movie theaters at this moment in time with the pandemic where it is? Gyms, for example, gyms and fitness centers can have 10% of their maximum capacity back. Again, not clear whether that's enough to actually help a business that was struggling really make a go of it.
Yeah. And it sounds like sort of the on again, off again, or what happened last time where businesses were allowed to reopen and then they had to close, that sort of whiplash nature has given some business owners cold feet, Paul says.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that's very, very much true. They want to have a feeling and an assurance that this time it's going to stick. And, that's just hard to come by right now. We're really in uncharted territory. As has been said, big weekend, Labor Day weekend approaches, and people wonder, are we just going to see another big spike in the coming weeks as we get through the incubation period of coronavirus? In 2 weeks, are we going to see another large spike that's going to just take us down a tier?
Yes, and San Diego is one of the few counties that is in this red tier, surrounded by counties in purple tiers, just like San Francisco and Napa County as well. Though as you go further north, you get more that are in, say, red or orange tiers. So, yeah, I mean, definitely so much to take into consideration. Brian tweets, I'd love to understand how positivity rate makes any sense without the testing pool being a random representative subset of a county's population. People generally go in for testing if they have the means and think they're at risk. Dr. Peter Chin-Hong, thoughts about Brian's point about positivity rate as a metric?
I think Brian brings up a good point. And, it is whether or not, how representative is testing positivity rate, which is a true population-based sample. If you're doing a study, you certainly wouldn't want an optimistic sample of folks just coming in because they could afford the test or they know where the testing site is. But the idea is not only about the absolute number of the number, but I think the trend that I think using it not to really say, first of all, there are two points. First of all, you use it not by itself, but you use it with the daily number of new cases for 100,000, and together they probably give you a crude measure. Of course, in the old system, we were using a whole bunch of different metrics, including hospital capacity and number of hospitalizations, which of course is less biased because people can't control whether or not, to some extent, if they're really sick, they can't really decide whether or not they'll go to the hospital or not. So there is some inherent bias in it, but I would say also it's the pattern. And, in a county where you can probably unravel large testing programs, particularly into disadvantaged communities, like some counties have, Alameda, San Francisco, you probably would get a better measure of what the truth is. But I think Brian's point is absolutely correct.
Well, let me go to caller Jake in Oakland. Hi, Jake.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am curious if there's any information on how the size and shape of an indoor space affects the safety of it. I'm curious specifically about the contrast between, say, a small space with just a few people in it, like a salon or even a classroom, versus a very large and kind of open space, like, say, the main public areas of a mall or a Costco or something similar, where there's a lot more room for airflow within even a larger quantity of people.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jake. Paul Sisson, did the state put in guidelines around that in terms of size of space?
I mean, they say that they have considered the various ways that people have become infected in terms of setting these tiers and deciding which venues can open first and to what extent. And so I think what they would say perhaps is what we see in terms of outbreaks and cases is that generally people aren't becoming as infected as often, even in these close spaces like barbershops and salons, as they might be in other venues, even if they might be a bit more wide open. In terms of the research that I've seen coming through, and you know, and there may be others that I haven't seen, but it seems like air exchange and airflow is seen as a rather large piece of this. But it, you know, in looking at the state's guidelines, it seems very clear that they were very interested in less restrictions for venues where both the client and the service provider can both be masked at all times and have you know, significant infection control protocols available and can really use them effectively. They talk a lot about, for example, not allowing as broad of an opening for loud places where people might need to yell to be heard. That would cause perhaps people to put more viral carrying water particles into the air. So for example, bars and distilleries and breweries remain closed. Those venues, I think they think they're, you know, they're going to be loud and you're going to have a much larger chance of things spreading there.
Mm-hmm. So they're seen as riskier. Well, Soror writes, I wished employees at hair salons could get tested regularly at a reasonable price so they can actually do it. I would be a lot more confident staying in a closed space with them and would also be happy to pay a little more for their services. I mean, would that help, you know, just in terms of getting employees tested, Dr. Chenong, do you feel like that should be a part of the state's rules? Regular
1,000,000%, Mina. I think testing is increasingly seen as a strategy of control, just not of disease control, outbreak control, not just the knowledge of whether or not you've had it or not. And you're absolutely right. The more we can have low cost, and absolutely, I think it should actually be free to everyone. This is a public health emergency after all. Low cost tests that are quick to get back, you can get back the results very quickly. And even though they may not be as sensitive, you do them frequently, they're easy to get, they're not uncomfortable, and it becomes a way of life. I think it can have a big impact on all these fears that we have. And there was one that was just received FDA emergency use authorization a few days ago, the Abbott test, that is in that one of the steps in the right direction, and one I think we should see. My dream is that you wake up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you do your low-cost test that you bought at Costco, you get a positive or negative, like a pregnancy test, and you know if you can go out and face the turmoil of the day.
Well, let me ask Arlinda to join us. Arlinda in Oakland, you're on.
Hi. My thought is, why not open up some public spaces, such as the fairgrounds, for some of these businesses that may be able to operate in that to reduce infection, such as maybe hair salons and barbers. Couldn't they cut in open space like that?
Thanks, Arlinda. I mean, she raises an interesting question here about making more outdoor spaces available since so many entities can only do things outdoors right now or at limited capacity, Paul Sisson. But I also wonder if you could speak to some of the restrictions around categories of theme parks, like, say, a Legoland versus a SeaWorld in San Diego.
Right. I think, you know, we've seen a fair amount of that. You know, I think it's kind of, you know, we here in San Diego, and I don't know how it is in the rest of the state, but we've seen a fair number of our barbershops and salons and nail studios move outdoors. There has been a lot of relaxation of civic regulation in terms of what you can do on the sidewalk out in front of your business. You know, and we've seen restaurants move out onto the sidewalks a lot as well. We've seen, for example, in the Gas Lamp Quarter in downtown San Diego, we've seen major streets shut down on certain days of the weekend to allow businesses to just take over the streets. And we've seen also some fair, you know, our fair was canceled this year in San Diego. And so we've seen some of those fair food vendors open up in parking lots and be in, you know, have people come drive through and pick up food as well. So it's certainly very possible, and you know, I think we've already seen a fair amount of it. In terms of amusement parks, I think we're still waiting on that. We are allowed, the state is already allowing zoos and other other types of organizations like museums to do outdoor operations, and the San Diego Zoo has been a good example of that. And under this this red tier that we're now in, they're allowed to actually start doing 25% of their capacity indoors as well. I think we're still waiting a little bit to find out exactly what's going to happen with amusement parks.
Yes, and like for example, there was some frustration that say Legoland still can't open while SeaWorld can.
Right.
I mean, the other thing that I wanted to ask you about were schools. So under the red tier, what can schools do?
Right. So in San Diego, we just you know, it was a situation where we were still we were off the state's watch list, and we had to wait 14 days for K through 12 schools to be able to reopen, and that clock ended on Monday. So as of Tuesday, any K-12 school district in San Diego County is able to reopen under their local school board's decision-making process. So we have seen some that are moving rather quickly to reopen. We have seen some private schools open under waivers that are allowed by the state already. But a lot of our larger districts are waiting at least a month, maybe more, to actually start any kind of indoor instruction on campuses again. You know, I think the general sense is they just want a little more time to work out exactly how they're going to do things like social distancing. You know, if you think of a lot of these school classrooms with 30 kids in a classroom, it just boggles the mind a little bit to think, how are you going to get those kids 6 feet of separation? If you don't, you need some kind of barrier or something. So I think that they're all just kind of still, you know, figuring that out.
And what's the threshold to close the school again?
Right. If you have an outbreak that involves 5% or more of the student population, then the school would need to close. Same with individual classrooms. And then if a district sees 25% or more of its total student volume test positive, then that district would need to close for a certain period of time. I think it's at least 2 weeks.
And so, but if a school had applied for a waiver ahead of time, or would that then also be, you know, basically rescinded if the county moved into a worse tier, like a purple tier?
No, actually, from what we understand, any schools granted waivers and any schools in general, once they've made it through this 14-day waiting period, even if the county suffers a more restrictive, now it's a tier, used to be back on the waiting list, the school districts would be able to remain open.
Again, we're talking with Paul Sisson, a reporter covering healthcare for the San Diego Union-Tribune, and Dr. Peter Chin Hong, an infectious disease specialist at UCSF Medical Center. And you, our listeners, 866-733-6786 is the number. And let me go to caller Carl in Calistoga. Hi, Carl. Join us.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead. You're on.
So I have so much stuff going on in my head around this that I could have a whole show with you, which I can't do. So I'll just focus on one thing. It seems that a lot of the regulations from the perspective of public health make a lot of sense, but they're sort of being imposed in a vacuum. I'm not a small business owner myself, but I have many people close to me who are, and the impact of these regulations and compliance is huge in terms of both reduced income, you know, having a restaurant, you know, that can only have 25% of the normal capacity, and it's been going on for months and months and months, you know, it's sometimes less than that. But then the other part is that very often the effort to be compliant and to create a safe situation simply adds to the expense side of running the business, putting out tables for sidewalks with parasols and, you know, enclosures and all that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm really concerned about that. And so I don't hear a lot of effort being put into really solving the problem for, you know, businesses, especially small businesses that are, you know, exhausting cash reserves and you know, really confronted with a horrific problem with no end in sight. I don't see how it's going to end.
Carl, thanks for raising that. And Paul Sisson, I mean, you've written about how people have shared similar stories with the public health official for San Diego County as well to try to get some sense of, I don't know, you know, some way of trying to put forward and modify some of these regulations that might ease some of that burden. I mean, what has been the reaction of Dr. Wooten and local officials?
Right. Yeah. I mean, this has been a steady drumbeat, and it's been really just terrible to witness, of course. I mean, people are really suffering through no fault of their own, losing their livelihoods, businesses that have been around in the community for a long, long time, you know, either having shut down already or worried that they're not going to make it. You know, and so we've had, you know, a little bit of a disagreement amongst our local leaders, especially on our county board of supervisors. You know, one will have a press conference talking about how we need to just, you know, open up much more broadly and help these businesses out. And another supervisor saying, you know, gosh, this is not the time to really relax. We're just going to suffer the exact same pattern that we did a few months ago. We're just going to see another big spike, and we're going to be back right where we started. So we need to have discipline enough to just really keep things more tightly locked down, you know, as long as we need to. It, you know, and it just seems like it's a daily back and forth and struggle for the leaders to decide, you know, which way it's going to go. Generally, the breakdown with our with our local board has supported staying more closed.
Well, we'll have more after the break. We're talking about the state's new plan for reopening. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about the new four-tier color-coded system, a redesign of the state's previous guidelines for counties to lift restrictions on businesses as California tries to reopen parts of its economy. We're talking with Dr. Peter Chin Hong of UCSF and Paul Sisson of the San Diego Union Tribune. And if you have questions or comments, 866-733-6786 is the number to call. The email address, forum@kqed.org. You can also reach us on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. And this listener, Bill, writes, we can go to Target, Costco, and Best Buy, but we can't get a haircut. Big business wins again. I mean, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, this is an interesting point. There's been some criticism of the fact that the state is so focused on, you know, when and how to open non-essential businesses, while at the same time, you know, allowing these bigger businesses with essential workers to remain open all this time, understanding that they're essential businesses, but maybe not necessarily being as focused as they could have been on safety in those businesses. Do you think that that criticism is warranted?
I mean, certainly to a certain extent. And, you know, one also has to think, you know, when I reflect on this, I'm certainly devastated by the loss of, you know, daily scores of businesses, and even in my local area, that are closing, and it's truly tragic. But you know, I also want individuals to get back to work too. And if it means that some of the larger businesses who are able to instate safety measures and protect their workers and give their workers adequate health care and give them training in COVID safety techniques, if they're able to open, that also means that, you know, folks in our communities can get back to work in some capacity. But you're right. I mean, the variety of or the differences in the way small businesses versus large corporations are regulated or have oversight, is being exposed in this sort of reopening phase.
Well, this listener asks, what's the status of adoption and use of rapid tests like the Abbott's in California? Is there a plan to use rapid tests like they do in the Northeast? Dr. Peter Chin-Hong, do you know what the status is in terms of distribution of these tests here? As you say, they could be a game changer.
Well, the rapid tests are being talked about a lot right now actively, and I would say that there probably wouldn't be a use for them in the healthcare setting because we're still probably going to rely on the more sensitive, regular PCR tests that we've been using. But I think there will be a game changer in large settings like schools and border control, airports, but that really hasn't been rolled out yet. But the federal government did commit tens of millions of dollars to buying some of these platforms. So I hope that these will get rolled out in a more systematic way at some point. I would say the other innovations that are going on right now for rapid testing and wide-scale testing includes saliva testing, which I've been a personal fan of all along. It's so much more comfortable. The NBA is using it. The Major League Baseball is using it. And I'm just surprised it hasn't been rolled out in a much more widespread way in the United States.
Well, Melody writes, I'm a nail artist in Oakland. Under the new rules, I'm only allowed to work outdoors, which isn't possible considering the UV-sensitive products I use. I see artists in New Orleans and Austin who have been open and working indoors since May. It's frustrating. If indoor beauty services were so dangerous, wouldn't we have seen salons close across the country? I mean, pause this, and you've spoken with some manicurists or nail artists as well in San Diego. What have they been telling you?
Right. They said all along, look, we have infection control protocols, and we do follow them. And we're happy to wear masks and we always wash our hands and we're not right up on our customers where we operate at a little bit of a distance. And so there have been a few outbreaks. Our local county health department tells us among nail salons, but really where they've seen the bulk of the outbreak so far has been in restaurants and businesses. And not so much in personal care services, although we have seen personal care services kind of shut down unless they're willing to move outside. So it's a little hard to know exactly what the denominator there is at the moment.
And I'm sure adds fuel to criticisms about arbitrariness, as you've pointed out in your reporting. This listener writes, UC Berkeley dorms opened last week. Colleges and universities are exempt from these rules for retail stores, K-12 schools, museums, etc. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that, answer that listener's question, but also just how things have been playing out in San Diego, because SDSU has been making headlines.
Right. Yeah. Universities do have some level of autonomy in terms of deciding what they want to do. And so it really has, all across the country, obviously, we've seen outbreaks starting to pop up as universities reopen, UNC being a huge example there. Locally, we have seen our two universities talk about bringing students back, SDSU having been a little quicker to do that. And we've seen really a lot of indications that many of the kids on campus, at least what people that folks see wandering around on the streets around the campus, may not really be adhering to a lot of these distancing and face covering requirements. Right now, we have an issue with visibility into these campuses and to what extent they're actually going to report the number of positive cases that occur and how often they're going to do so. And I think parents are really going to demand to know pretty much in real time or as in real time as possible what's going on these campuses or near these campuses with off-campus housing.
Well, let me go to caller Martin in Santa Clara. Hi, Martin.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Listen, my question is, have we learned anything from what is going on in other countries, in particular Asia? They don't appear to have this, gradation you know, kind of policy process problem. They decide whether they need to be open. Is it a level of personal care? You know, it's why they're able to be more successful at this, or what do you think the reasons are for that? And I'll take my answer off the air. That's fine.
Thanks, Martin. Dr. Peter Chin Hong, do you have any thoughts on Martin's question?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts, and I've been thinking about that since, you know, the beginning of the pandemic. I think there's so many differences between Asia and the United States in terms of our response to the pandemic. First of all, you know, there is in many countries in Asia, if not all of them, a very singular, clear national strategy and voice. And when you have that national strategy and voice coming from the top, everyone follows suit. It's kind of like when we had swine flu or Ebola, the CDC told us what to do. In COVID-19 in the United States, it's like 50 different countries. We're all doing different things, except that our borders are very porous. And we don't do disease screening at the borders of the state. So it's kind of like you're giving the autonomy to control at the state level, but yet you don't have the power to really, or the will, you know, rightfully so, to really close off states from each other. So that's one thing. The other thing that makes Asia very different from the U.S. is that they've seen badness from SARS a few years ago. And I think that what that led to is the appreciation by the community in general to take personal protection very seriously. And that, you know, I'm thinking of masking, and community masking was something that was done in Asia from the beginning of the pandemic. In fact, in areas of Chinatown in San Francisco, one wonders why the levels of COVID are so low there. And one of the hypotheses is that they were getting this messaging from Asia a long time ago, and everyone is wearing masks. So I think these things that we've learned over the months here, I think they were adopted really early on in Asia, either from historical precedent from SARS and the devastating local effect that had there, or from a very singular clear voice that was science-informed and that people listened to.
Well, let me go to Joan in San Jose. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I believe Dr. Fauci said that outdoor swimming pools were fairly safe as long as they weren't too crowded. The main thing would be dressing rooms, which might not be well ventilated. How about pools like our local Milpitas Community Center, which has gorgeous, warm outdoor pools opening up, and people just come dressed in their swimsuits, don't go to the changing room, just maintain a very clean restroom. If they go in, they go in. But I would like to see our outdoor swimming facilities opened, and they have chlorine in the water. If they're not too many people in a lane, if there's one person per lane, for example, if they extend their hours, lifeguards, I think they could open up.
Well, Joan, thanks. I mean, in a lot of amenities that are outdoors, can't they, Paul Sisson?
Right. You know, a lot of the venues, I'm not sure about outdoor lane swimming in particular, but, you know, our beaches are all open. You can go swim in the ocean all day if you want, and have been for months now. And we really haven't seen, at least as far as I'm aware, you know, that they haven't really announced any outbreaks associated with swimming. So, you know, what the steady mantra has been, outdoor activities are much less likely to be venues where transmission occurs, but you still need to have some distancing. So to me, I think that's probably right, that you know, lane swimming with some distancing, and, you know, probably ought to be something that's coming. I'm not super clear on exactly where it's at, to be honest with you.
Well, let me go to Adrian in Stockton. Hi, Adrian.
Hello. It's Adrian. I'm concerned. I just lost my brother 2 days ago. He's being cremated, and we wanted to have a graveside service, but we're being told only 10 people can be there, which is ludicrous. It's a very hard time right now. A lot of pain, a lot of sorrow. But
Adrian,
to be, yes.
I'm so sorry for your loss. You're saying that you want to have an outdoor graveside service, but you're being limited to 10? 10 people? Is that? Yeah.
Yeah. And we all wear our masks. I have a fairly large family, but everybody's been very good and cooperative about masking, hand sanitizer, social distancing. So I don't know what to do at this point. It's very, very hard.
I'm sure. And do you know where services like this would fall, Paul Sisson, in terms of sort of the sectors and how they've been regulated in terms of capacity?
I do believe that outdoor gatherings are of this nature are allowed. And let me express my sorrow at this story as well. What a really tough situation. It's just breaks your heart. I do believe outdoor gatherings like this are allowed, but the distancing is required, and I would need to research that a little more to be sure exactly how it unfolds on a state level like that. I apologize.
Well, Jessica,
I don't want to give the wrong advice.
Yeah, no, I understand. And the state does have a website, right, where you can go for some more specific questions and answers. Frequently asked questions at covid19.ca.gov. But, you know, it just does feel like it's hard to be able to account for all the different needs and industries and try to do this as safely as possible. For example, Jessica writes, I own a children's music school offering private lessons and small group classes. It's really hard for me to find information about when I might be allowed to reopen and what precautions I'll have to put in place in order to do so. None of the guidelines out there seem to apply to my business. Do you have any help for Jessica, Paul Sisson?
Right. The state actually does have a fairly better list that you can now look at. If you go to covid19.ca.gov, there's a spot there where you can type in your county and hit go, and it will take you through a massive list of different business types and activity types and organization types, and you can really drill in and get a sense of what's allowed at the moment and what's not allowed at the moment. I apologize that I'm not able to hold all of that in my head, but there's just so much of it, it's really hard for one person to have read literally every little instruction on there. But it is, you know, each industry has a whole industry guidance document that they have to follow. And
how their counties are also interpreting some of these guidelines as well.
Right, and how the new tier system applies to that in terms of, you know, you're in this tier now, so now this is allowed. They have tried to make it a little more easy to access.
Well, Steve asks, how do asymptomatic individuals factor into these metrics when roughly 40% that are infectious have no symptoms? Dr. Peter Chin Hong.
Asymptomatic individuals are included in the case numbers. Anybody who's positive, whether or not you're symptomatic or not. I know there's been a lot of discourse about what asymptomatic means, but I would say from a medical perspective, you don't know where that asymptomatic person is going, so they should be counted because an asymptomatic person doesn't necessarily stay asymptomatic forever. They may be in the evolution to becoming symptomatic. So I think, and more importantly, from a public health perspective, asymptomatic individuals do have transmissible disease. So I think, you know, even though there are some individuals who think they shouldn't be factored into these metrics, I think they should for a variety of reasons.
Mary asks, how safe is it to have cleaners in your home at this time? Dr. Peter Chin Hong?
Oh, I'm sorry, what is that?
Cleaners? I believe she means house cleaners.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So in general, I mean, again, it's not necessarily the setting, but more the activity. So if, you know, for example, I've heard of colleagues who did have their cleaners in home, but they were outside when the cleaners were in. So you limit the density of the people indoors. And, you know, if the cleaner is wearing a mask, of course, there's a potential risk to the cleaner as well if it's a really small enclosed space where you might have suspended virus for a while. But again, in general, for most people, if you can ventilate the room, crack open the windows, you know, have it happen during the day and not a lot of or no one is inside, there's no reason why it shouldn't happen because, again, it's not about the setting, but rather the behaviors that come with the setting.
Well, let me see if I can squeeze Anne from Mountain View in quickly. Hi, Anne.
Hi, yeah. I'd really love to see the business task force get more proactive about actually assisting businesses to come up with, you know, rapid answers to getting back to business. For example, for a really long time, our society has been crying out for some answer to help brick and mortar businesses come together and be available online in a way that Amazon isn't, to compete with Amazon. You know, get tech volunteers to create that platform that has a virtual space, a virtual community space where people can kind of come and be together and see musicians and maybe browse in a way that they can't on Amazon, where they can see the brick and mortar spaces and get their things online.
I hear you, Anne. I mean, there's going to need to be a lot of support and advocacy for these entities as we come out of this and something more proactive. I can understand why Anne feels that way. We are just coming up on the end of the hour. And just Dr. Chin Hong, in just the last 20 seconds, can you just, because we are going into a holiday weekend, just remind us what precautions we should be taking?
I would say, you know, the 3 W's again: wear your mask, wash your hands, and watch your distance.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist at UCSF Medical Center, thanks for joining us. Also, thank you to Paul Sisson, reporter covering healthcare for the San Diego Union-Tribune. Appreciate having you on as well. Thanks also to our listeners for their questions and comments. Ariana Prail produced today's segment. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.